on and leading up to that pick, and we know what type of team we are. We know what we have to do to be able to go win games, and it's executed at a high level. You know, it's just focusing on getting that completion, focusing on taking it one play at a time, and then guys were making plays out there once they got the ball in their hands. So, you know, obviously, like you said, the pick, I mean, it was a bad decision, and it's tough, and it's all about how you respond and bounce back.
The Pack take on the Cardinals, who stunned the Niners 24-23 at Lambeau Sunday. And for postseason baseball, later tonight, the Royals look to even up the series against the Yankees. And going on right now, the Guardians and Tigers are in a pitching duel in the seventh inning. Detroit's Tarek Skubal is lighting up with 8 strikeouts, and the Guardians' Matthew Boyd went 4.2 scoreless innings. I'm Justice Sear, and this was your 5 p.m. WRST 90.3 Sports Update.
Starts in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, buddy!
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Sports Page, airing every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. on 90.3 WRST-FM or 90.3 WRC.org. Dylan Eckhart, joined with the usual crew, Aiden Applegate, Jacob Link. Fellas, how are we doing today? I feel like at this point in the semester, things are starting to get crazy. Assignments starting to pile up. I know I'm starting to feel that. How are we doing today, boys?
Yeah, you know, the best part about this time of year is when we get to come in here and just talk about sports. Don't even have to think about school for, you know, an hour every Mondays from 5 to 6. So I'm just enjoying being here, and I can't wait to get the show on the roll.
Yeah, that's always pretty good for sure. Aiden, how about yourself?
I mean, besides the show, I mean, for some of my classes, I feel like I'm just on autopilot mode right now. Everybody's starting to get sick, so I'm starting to get sick as well, so it's a great time.
Yeah, it's definitely a great time with the sickness going around. But, yeah, we come in here for an hour out of the day, talk about some sports, some good stuff, some not-so-good stuff, like the Brewers still not being able to win a playoff series. What are some feelings on that? We'll get that out of the way right away. I know myself, very disappointing because this is a team that continues to win their division with ease, it seems like, and then they go into the first round, and we have 9 playoff appearances and have yet to win and have success in a playoff series.
Yeah, it's hard to say one person lost the game, but with this one, it was all on Devin Williams. I mean, he's the one who went out there. We had a 2-0 lead. He goes out there, gives up a 3-run homer to Pete Alonso. Puts us down 3-2, then we give up another run, it's 4-2, and you can't expect a team to come back under those circumstances when you go down 4-2 if you're leading for 2-0. You can't think that there's much of a chance for them to come back in the bottom of the ninth, which they were unable to do so. But, yeah, it was just kind of on Devin Williams. It's just really unfortunate because we consider him to be one of our best pitchers, if not the best closer, one of the best closers in all of the major leagues. And for him to go out there and blow that lead, it just is mind-boggling, to say the least. And I have seen some stuff where Williams has been tipping off his pitches, or especially in that at-bat against Pete Alonso. Alonso knew pretty much what was going to be called. So Williams, what he does is, for his fastball, he keeps his hand further up in his glove and keeps it higher up on his chin just so he's able to grab the ball better. And then on his changeup, sorry, I mixed that one up. So on his fastball, his glove is lower. Just looking at my notes, his glove is actually lower and his hand is deeper in the pocket. On his changeup, it's further up and he has a different grip on the ball, obviously, because it's a changeup. He has to get his fingers lower or more onto the ball. So you could tell, I saw images of when he was throwing his fastball versus his changeup, and it was completely different. I mean, you see in his changeup, it's up here, and then his fastball is down, you know, more towards the chest instead of his chin. And I also saw images, too, of, you know, before Alonso went up to bat, one of the bench coaches for the Mets came up to him and was talking to him about some of the stuff. And you could see the coach, like, put his hands up to his chin to signify that's when he's going to be throwing his changeup. And then lower down is when he was going to be throwing his fastball. And you go out there and you watch that at bat after learning this. You can see Alonso not even looking at the first pitch because he knew it was going to be a changeup. Second pitch, he knew it was a fastball. He let that one go by him. Third pitch again, it was going to be the changeup. And he just keeps his hands back and just rockets that one into the outfield. And so it's just, I don't hate Devin Williams, but this was just the most Brewers-esque way to lose a series. I mean, Devin Williams, for the most part, I think is not a postseason guy. He's dominant in, like, the regular season. He can get the outs. But in the postseasons that he's been in, he's just really struggled. I mean, he didn't play in 2019 and 2020 in the postseason. 21, he ended up punching a wall and broke his hand when they clinched the division, so he didn't pitch in 21. And then 23, he let in two insurance runs in game one against Arizona in that wildcard series. The Brewers eventually got swept. And then, of course, in 24, he gives up the three-run shot, and the Brewers choke away their lead. So to be honest with you, I don't want to blame this only on Devin Williams, but it kind of is pretty much only on Devin Williams.
Yeah, and Pete Alonso hits his, you know, his most important home run of the season. So that was Jacob Link's rant on the Brewers and Mets series for sure. Aiden, you got any comments yourself?
I mean,
what else can you say after that?
But the main thing is that, I mean, I don't want to tell you guys that I told you so.
Yeah,
but
true.
I mean,
but here you are.
I kind of am, but yeah, I mean. Yeah. I mean, I was listening to my roommates watching the Brewers game, and oh my God, were they just screaming at their TV.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, I expected it personally.
Yeah, frustrating to see, especially when your hopes are getting up like that. But we'll move away from the negative talk, as there was some good stuff that happened with Titan Athletics this week, which we'll get into after we take our quick break. But the rundown coming up for that, the UWO women's golf team, they competed this weekend at the WIAC Championship hosted by the Reedsburg Country Club. The women's soccer team, they traveled to La Crosse for their first match of WIAC conference play. Volleyball, they concluded their two trianglers at the Golf Sports Center and a long homestand for them. And Perkins Stadium set an attendance record that myself and Aiden were there for. So was Jacob with the football team. Set an attendance record for Division III football played on campuses. This Saturday, and a WIAC record at about 21,113, I think was the exact number. So we'll have all that and more coming up here on the Titan Athletics segment, but we will take a quick break here on the sports page, 90.3 WRST-FM.
Interested in volunteering? Ascension Mercy Hospital is looking for volunteers. Work with craft projects, fundraising, mass, the gift shop, maintenance, transportation, and volunteer with different units like outpatient and inpatient rehab. Interested? Volunteer to make a difference in the lives of patients. Head on over to www.ascension.org/Ascension Mercy Volunteer. Brought to you by 90.3 WRST FM Oshkosh.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. We are on the Titan Athletics segment here on the sports page on 90.3 WRST, airing every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. We will begin with the women's golf team. Again, they were at the Reedsburg Country Club for the WIAC Championship. Jacob, what do you got for us on the women's golf team?
Yes, so the UW Oshkosh women's golf team placed fourth at the three-day 2024 Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference Championship. That was held October 4th through the 6th at the Reedsburg Country Club in Oshkosh. Was led by two top 10 finishers in Ava Downey and Taryn Endress. Downey, a fifth-year senior, tied for fifth place with UW-Whitewater's Ellie Johnson, finishing with 242 total strokes, that's plus 26 over par, over the three rounds for her first career top 10 finish at the WIAC Championship. Endress, on the other hand, tied for ninth with UW-Dub's Peyton Schmidt with 244 strokes, 28 over par, while junior Sydney Bornhorst tied for 17th place with three other golfers, recording 250 strokes for 34 over par. As a team, UWO finished with 989 strokes, 125 over par, for its best finish at the WIAC Championship since 2019. UW-Dub, of course, we got to keep talking about Whitewater here. Whitewater seems to have the Titans number in just about every single sport.
Of course.
Anyways, the Warhawks won its seventh straight conference title with 958 strokes. That's 94 over par, followed by UW-Stout in second with 967 strokes and UW-Lacrosse in third with 976 strokes. Stout's Julia Amai won the individual WIAC title with 229 strokes, as the Blue Devils have now had a golfer win the conference championship for two straight years. UWO senior Alyssa Dreyer was named to the WIAC All-Sportsmanship Team, while Stout's head coach was named Quick Trip Coach of the Year. The Titans will have a break before returning to action back in the spring, where they will look to clinch a spot in the NCAA Division III Women's Golf Tournament.
So fall season comes to an end for the women's golf team. Some good stuff there. Again, Jacob just mentioned they'll be on break before taking back action in the spring semester. The women's soccer team was at North Park this past Wednesday, I believe, and then was at lacrosse, for the first game of WIAC play. Aiden, what do you got for us on the women's soccer team?
Well, first off, for the North Park University game, I was actually working for Titan TV and filming it, and Jacob here was announcing for that game. And as a soccer player myself, I thought that that game was very disappointing. If you look at the stats for that game, very equal. Both teams got 19 shots on the goal. 19 shots. North Park got 13 shots on goal. The Titans only got 8 shots on goal. But, I mean, statistics-wise, this was an even match, but the effort wasn't really there, I felt like. There was a lot of times, about 4 or 5 times, where it was just the forward and the goalie. And every time, it's just the effort wasn't there. Like, you gotta, you gotta crash the ball. If you're not gonna crash the ball, then there's no point of doing the one-on-one. Which I thought was really disappointing. But North Park scored 3 goals. Maya Applequist, Emily Lee, and Ella Czar. And the Titans were only able to score 1 goal by Jaden Leroy. And then, I mean, yeah, I thought it was just a really frustrating game. I heard that the coach for the Titans was just having an actual fit about the whole thing. But when it comes to the lacrosse game, did not go that well either. It was a lot like the University of Chicago game. 23 shots by lacrosse, only 2 shots by Wisconsin, or by the Titans. Sorry about that. Only 1 shot on goal. Lacrosse had 10 shots on goal. The final score was 0-3. Lacrosse scored by Alex McCone, Ellie Arbent, and Lizzie Hanstead. The next game for the Titans will be on Wednesday, the 9th, against Whitewater. And that game is going to be just as tough. Because Whitewater, some of their stats, they look really good. So, I mean, I just hope that the Titans can at least get 1 goal.
It seems like every game has been a struggle here for the UW Oshkosh soccer team, and unfortunate to see. Jacob, you mentioned last episode that this was a team that was, you know, conference winners a few years ago, and to see them struggle this much has been just unfortunate to watch.
Yeah, it was crazy because, of course, I was on the call, as Aiden said, for that game on Titan TV. The Titans had so many opportunities to put the ball in the net, especially Jaden Leroy. She had about 3 opportunities, just one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and she just puts the ball wide. You have to at least force a save out of North Park, at least force a save out of the goalkeeper. But it just really stinks to sit there and watch it, and for this player not to even put the ball on target. You know what I mean? Like, at least, like I said before, at least force a save out of somebody. You don't know what's going to happen if you shoot the ball at the goalie. Instead, you just shoot it way out of bounds, completely miss it, and then the opportunity is lost. And then the goals that they let in, there was just no communication on defense. It's like that ball is just pinballing around, and everybody stand there looking at each other like, who's going to grab the ball? Are you going to grab it? Am I going to grab it? No communication. And so North Park was just able to put it in the back of the net. They scored off a corner kick. You don't see that very much. You don't score directly off a corner kick. Usually, you know, somebody's there to, like, head the ball in or tap it in. No, they scored directly on the corner kick. So that just goes to show you that this defense is in shambles. They need to figure out what they're doing, because this is, frankly, embarrassing for everybody to be associated with the UWO soccer team. And I don't know what's going to change, but something needs to change fast. They're not going to be able to compete with Whitewater. I mean, if they couldn't compete with lacrosse and Chicago, or even North Park. North Park hasn't had a winning season since 2006.
Yikes.
And we lost 3-1 to them.
Yeah.
So, I'll be on the call again for the Whitewater game. I'm kind of concerned about what kind of scoreline we're going to see against the Warhawks, because As we said before, the Warhawks seem to always have our number in literally every single sport.
Yeah, Whitewater is always tough no matter what sport we're playing. And we'll get to that later on in the football segment as well. But, yeah, hopefully we can see some sort of turnaround here. Something's got to change, obviously, for this Titan soccer team. But we'll move on now to Titan volleyball. They hosted their second triangular, kicking off with UW Stout Friday, and then they hosted Carroll on Saturday at noon. UW Oshkosh volleyball defeated the Stout Blue Devils 3-1 on Friday, registering 56 kills off 166 total attacks. Sammy Forberg led the team with 15 kills off of 34 total attacks. Callie Mao had 27 assists. Malia Winchell had 5 service aces, and Abby Fergreen registered 25 digs. Robin Kirsch led the Titans with 39 total attacks, but you and I, Jacob, ended up seeing that. Unfortunately, she was injured during that last set. She fell hard on that knee that she previously had surgery on, and as a result, Kirsch was absent from the match against Carroll. So that was really tough to see her go down. Been one of the top offensive, you know, distributors for this Titan team. But despite that, you know, and despite a kind of definitely a sloppy first set, but also a sloppy end of the second set, Titans were still able to put to good. Wow, I can't talk today. Titans were still able to put together a pretty good performance, and we ended up catching up with head coach John Ellman, who talked with us after that win against the Blue Devils.
Stout is a phenomenal team. They're just on the up and up. They're super, super scrappy. They play with a ton of energy. And so every team is built fundamentally different, right? But I just thought tonight maybe our balance at multiple attack locations helped us out. And man, did we serve really, really well tonight and kept them out of system in 2, 3, and 4 there.
Yeah, how much does it help this team when you're able to put those service balls in a dangerous situation? How much does that put the pressure on the defense?
Oh, it's massive. And so as soon as you get down to one option and they've got to send about a ball outside all the time, it gets a little bit easier for us to defend. And so the serve pass game in volleyball, you hear it all the time, is being this critical component. And tonight, yeah, we surely won that battle.
And then who impressed you the most on your team this evening?
Oh, I don't think there was any one. I thought that the way that we started, just in terms of energy and accountability and just trust with each other and set one from, I mean, everybody, our sideline and court, maybe wasn't up to the standard that we had set for ourselves. And so that's what we addressed between 1 and 2. And then to just come out and have a ton of energy on our sideline fueling us. And you can tell when people are dialed in. And so as we're looking at each other and making eye contact and making plays and talking about how to adjust to things as you roll through a set, that was really pretty special to see. And so just really like a team response and team win there, I think.
Team win, team response. Not one player really stood out to Coach Ellman, and it was, you know, in our view as well, it didn't seem like there was really one player that was, you know, carrying the team at some point. It was a very good team win against a tough Stout defense. I thought one of the toughest defenses that they had faced, at least at home, at least that we have seen. I mean, Robin Kirsch with those 39 total attacks, I think she succeeded with 9 kills. I mean, you know, there definitely was a height mismatch there. I mean, Robin Kirsch, 5'7", against those front three for Stout that were at least 6'1", you know, 6 foot. So a height mismatch there, but the Titans still able to put together a very good performance.
Yeah, as you said, that Stout defense was, you know, very impressive. They had 24 blocked attempts on the day. Oshkosh only had 10. You can see in that first set, Oshkosh was having some issues with the front line of Stout. They couldn't seem to get the balls over the top of them. But as the set went on, I felt like Oshkosh started changing where they were sending some of their kills. Instead of trying to send it to the back line, instead they weren't to try to go on the sides. And I think that just goes back to the coaching that Ellman has done. And he can, you know, spot issues with the team. And then the team, as we saw in that match, the team will actually take the timeouts and come together as a huddle and discuss with themselves what's going on. So Ellman will talk to some of his captains, but then it's the captains that pretty much are leading this team on the court. And I think that just goes to show you what type of culture the Titans have had in the past and what they have right now in this program, that Ellman can coach a little bit, but it's actually up to, you know, his own team to make the adjustments, which they have been doing.
Yeah, and it's always the captains leading, like you said, Jacob, leading those team meetings. Whenever they call a timeout or whenever the other team calls a timeout, Ellman's talking with, you know, the assistant coaches for UWO. You know, he's not in there like, you know, traditionally you would see with head coaches. But it's, you know, it's usually those captains like Sammy Proberg, Riley Kent that are leading that team and really, you know, getting the conversation going. Titans then face the Carroll Pioneers on Saturday at the Kolff Sports Center, where they got the 3-0 sweep and set scores of 25-13, 25-14, and 25-15. Dominating performance for the Titans. Saw them register 38 kills off of 108 attacks. Sammy Proberg registered 11. Riley Kent had 8. And Hannah Moe had 7 kills. So, again, another really good team win against that Carroll Pioneers team. They moved to 16-4 on the year and 2-1 in Wyatt Conference play. They're going to face Lawrence University tomorrow at the Kolff Sports Center with first serve scheduled for 7 p.m. Myself, Jacob Link, will be on the call for that. Aiden Applegate will be holding it down in the studio, so we'll have the same crew that we had for the last volleyball broadcast. So tune into that. Again, should be around 7 p.m. pregame starting at 6:50. Still really good stuff from our volleyball team. We'll move on to Titan football, where they were at Perkins Stadium against the Whitewater Warhawks and made it very close. I have to say, I was very surprised. I think most of the Titan fans were surprised at how close this game was on the scoreboard. But Jacob, you talked off air about some of the, you know, questionable coaching decisions. There were still a lot of mistakes made on the offensive side of the ball and defensive side, but from what I noticed, myself and Aiden were there for the call on the game. A lot of drop passes, a lot of miscommunications with freshman quarterback Cole Warren and really whoever he was throwing to. And Whitewater also capitalized off of some game-changing plays like the Clayton Schwalbe fumble at the 10-yard line, which would have put the Titans in quintessential position to score. And you talked about that, Jacob, off air, how, you know, Clayton was down on that play, but it was ended up being ruled a fumble. And officiating, questionable, a lot of things, you know, that the Titans had control of went wrong, but there were also some things that the Titans maybe didn't have control of that went wrong.
Yeah, I have to say that after that game, it was probably the most disappointed that I have ever been in my 4 years, you know, watching or being a part of the Titan football team. That was the most disappointed that I have felt after a game, because we should have had that game. We were up 7-0 after the first quarter. Now, the wind played a huge factor, I feel like, into some of those drops. You know, when we were going into the wind, we didn't score a single point. When we had the wind, we scored 14 points, 7 in the first, 7 in the fourth. Whitewater scored 14 points going with the wind at their backs. They actually ended up scoring 7 more in the fourth quarter. But, yeah, it just comes down to some of the officiating calls and some of those drops. The officials, luckily, I can't get fined, you know what I mean, for, you know, bashing the officials. But how does Whitewater have one penalty all day? That doesn't make sense. One penalty all day, and it's on an offsides on a kickoff.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make sense. Yeah. The amount of times that I saw guys holding our guys, I couldn't even tell you how many times I counted my hands.
Yeah, I mentioned that on air, and I probably couldn't count on my hands how many times that Curtis Jaskolski got held or Joey Gordon got held on the edge. Those guys were beating them off the ball, you know, and as an offensive lineman, usually you can try to hide that. It's a lot tougher on the edge to hide a holding call. Usually that's where the holds are going to come from, especially on pass protection and pass plays. But yeah, a lot of that stuff that I saw with my own eyes from way up in the press box. I mean, Perkins Stadium is a big stadium, yeah. Obviously, even compared to J.J. Keller Field. And I could see that without binos, you know, up in the press box. And yeah, none of those were called. So, but the Titans also did shoot themselves in the foot with some penalties. The two personal fouls from Bryce Edwards and Kyle Dietzen definitely did not help the Titans. It allowed Whitewater to march down the field as they could. But there were a lot of other things that the Titans also shot themselves in the foot for that they had control over. Cole Warren, you know, missing guys downfield, throwing behind guys on shallow passes, you know, the top receivers that are expected to make the plays and, you know, catch the ball, do their jobs, you know, that couldn't happen. You know, there were a lot of first downs that the Titans had where, you know, the ball is in, I'm going to use John Matthew here as an example because that was one of them. Downfield, had possession, had the first down, and just dropped out of his hands. A good ball by Warren, just couldn't catch the ball. So I think the offense, and this is usually, in my experience calling games for Whitewater and Oshkosh, this is how it goes. Defense keeps us in the game. Offense can't do anything with it when they're on the field. And I think that that's what happened this past Saturday. And it was just, again, the score was obviously closer, but it was the same old song and dance, I think, for UWO.
And I thought what was really weird is that I thought the offensive line did pretty well in the first half. They were like Cole Warren was, he had time to throw the ball. He had time to look for open passes. The wide receivers were able to make openings. And then all of a sudden in the third quarter, offensive line just gets broken up every single time. And Cole Warren has maybe a second, maybe 2 seconds to throw the ball. So which caused them a lot of points and ended up giving Whitewater a touchdown because of it. And I felt like it was a different team almost. Like the offensive line, like it wasn't the same team from the first half. And I mean, thankfully they like recovered some of that towards the end of the fourth quarter. But I mean, I was really confused on how the switch up was just that dramatic.
Yeah, and I think the offensive line definitely put together a better, way better performance against Whitewater than they did Michigan Tech. Whereas Michigan Tech, they were just getting steamrolled the entire game. The first half, that first drive from the Titans was some of the best ball I've seen all year, you know? But then where was that? That was absent until they ended up scoring in the second half. So I think that the consistency was just not there for the Titans, and the Whitewater defense, you know, shows that they're still one of the top defenses in the Wyatt Conference.
We've seen this now, excuse me, for the last couple games where the Titans start off really hot in the first quarter, and then third quarter comes around, and they can't seem to move the ball whatsoever. Now, is that adjustments made at halftime by the opposing coaches that we don't pick up on? I don't know. But you mentioned it, Aiden, and I completely agree with you. That third quarter was completely different from the Warhawks. I mean, Cole Warren finished the game being sacked 5 times and lost he lost 30 yards. So he finished the day with negative 30 yards rushing. Like, that shouldn't happen. We only sacked Cinetti, like, maybe once. Mm-hmm. I think once on the score sheet.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing, frankly, that our offensive line, which is always touted as being one of the best in the WAC, we have scouts come to our practices all the time from the Packers, the Vikings, the Bears, New Orleans. But then they can't perform in the game. And even like the rushing yards, we only had 44 rushing yards from Lovelace compared to 215 total yards for Whitewater.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on there? Our passing game, I thought, was fine. We had 283 yards total passing, which was more than their 119. But we knew that they were going to run the ball every single time. And it's hard to blame the defense when we had the ball 13 minutes less of time of possession. So they were out there a lot more than the offense was. So it's hard to blame them. But especially that last drive, you knew they were going to run the ball every single time. And yet we still looked like we didn't know what they were going to do on offense. It just didn't make sense. Some of that, I think, is the fact that we only have 3 down linemen most of the time on our defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it so much harder to stop the run when you can't plug those gaps as a D lineman.
Yeah, so, and I think Whitewater definitely feeds off that. And I think that they were going to run the ball no matter what until our defense was until our run defense was respected. And I never saw any point in the game where, you know, our run defense was, you know, really respected by the Warhawks. I mean, I think that first half, I think the Titans in that first half played a way better game than they did in that second half. And I think that there were times where Tamir Thomas or Brian Stanton, who have been really good for the Warhawks, Stanton, a sophomore, leading that team in rushing yards, with Tamir Thomas still with that senior experience. There were times where that defense was able to stuff them for 2-3 yards. But, you know, with those guys, you know, that's all you need until you can get a big play on third down, which the Warhawks always delivered on that. That throw down to Brian Wilterdink the guy in his face, still able to make the catch. Coverage was solid. Coverage was tight. Could have been an offensive PI. I don't know why that wasn't called. But, again, you can't blame the entire game on the refs because the Titans had a lot of stuff that they could have controlled and just ended up shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, on that one catch, actually, that was the loudest I have ever heard a college football stadium at the D3 level in my life. Being there field side and hearing him make that catch over the top of our defensive back, it was so, I couldn't even describe how loud it was, but it was unlike anything I'd ever heard before. Hearing all 22,000 basically fans on their feet just screaming, hearing that stupid cannon go off every time they score. But yeah, it was.
I forgot how loud that thing was.
It did startle me
a couple times. I'd be in the middle of talking and it was like, I'm like, whoa. So, but yeah, I think the atmosphere there was absolutely incredible. So that definitely fed into the broadcast for us. I think it fed into the game for the Titans. But mistakes on the offensive side, I think definitely cost them this game. They'll go back and try to draw that up.
I actually thought the defense played really well, considering it's Whitewater.
Right.
You know, you got to expect that you're going to let them score at least three times, because Whitewater's known for their offense and, I guess their entire team, because they usually have at least one guy getting drafted by the NFL.
Right.
But our secondary, I thought, played a lot better this game than they did against Michigan Tech.
I agree.
Because they kept everything in front of them. They were never beat, clearly. I mean, maybe just once. I think there was one throw that should have been probably caught by a Warhawk.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they kept everything in front of them for this game. Didn't let them go right past them on go routes. The biggest part of the game, of course, was the run, like we have been talking about. And I think they went to the run because of the wind, because they were having no success throwing the ball going into that wind, which was 30 miles an hour, swirling around that bowl, hard to throw balls like that. And I think that's why the Titans struggled there in the second and third quarters, because they couldn't complete the passes into the wind with the ball because it was flying all over the place. Our guys couldn't seem to catch it. But then also, we couldn't get the run game going. So then what can you really do going into a wind if you can't throw and your guys are just going to get stuffed at the line on the run? You have any options.
Yeah, and there were a couple of rushes that Justice Lovelace, had some commanding yards off of. But, that was one drive, and we never really saw that the rest of the game. It was really just Warren trying to look downfield and make good plays, which, again, offensive line, I think, played a way better game. They gave him time up until that, fourth quarter toward the end of the game. I think they just got fatigued. But he was looking downfield, and it was either he was off on his throw or the ball just couldn't be caught. And that's especially going against a Warhawk team that's ranked now 11th in the nation, or 10th in the nation, I believe. You can't have those mistakes.
I really thought that Jose Munoz Dominguez had a really good game. He had two picks. Almost had two picks. One interception, which I thought. When I heard the crowd just die down immediately the second that interception was taken, just filled me up full of excitement. But sadly they gave up that opportunity. But yeah.
Yeah, almost had the one midfield. Hit him right in the chest, it looked like. I thought he was going to come up with it, but the one on the sideline was nice. And again, that was just another example of the defense trying to get this offense back in the game. And unfortunately, like Aiden said, the offense could not capitalize off of stuff like that. But Oshkosh will move on, and they have an even tougher opponent, I would argue, in La Crosse, which, looking at these scores from the WIAC, it was an interesting week for sure. River Falls beats Eau Claire 71-14. At home, River Falls has the most average points in the Wyatt Conference. They're our last game of the season, and it's at River Falls. Platteville remains undefeated, and they beat La Crosse 30-27 in overtime. And then Stevens Point loses at home to UW Stout 22-15. But the big ones for me, or really the biggest one for me, is Platteville. Platteville 30-27 over La Crosse, who coming into this was third in the nation. And this week, especially for the Wyatt Conference, really shook up the rankings. River Falls is now the highest-ranked team in the Wyatt Conference. They're at fourth right now. They moved from sixth to fourth. Platteville moves from an unranked team, or I believe they were bottom. They were mid-20s, doesn't matter. But they're up to 11 now. 11 now, and Whitewater is 10th. And La Crosse moves down the lowest with that loss. They're now 12th. So you got Whitewater, Platteville, La Crosse from 10th to 12th, all on top of each other, chasing River Falls, who's in fourth, and then we are still left over. We're still ranked in 20th, but slowly working down, unfortunately.
Yeah, that game against Platteville, I saw the end of that one. That game was insane. It went into overtime after La Crosse. They nailed a 55-yard field goal at their home stadium. They nailed that one to send it into overtime. They got the stop against the Pioneers, and on the other side, they ran this trick play where it was a double pass. They threw it out to the wide receiver. Wide receiver threw it out to another wide receiver in the end zone, uncovered for the touchdown. The team stormed the field. It was electric. I can only imagine what it was like as a La Crosse fan, being inside the top five and seeing that loss. Nobody expected them to walk into La Crosse, one of the toughest places to play in the WIAC, and come away with a win like that. That was just amazing. And it just makes me a bit concerned about what's going to happen when we play Platteville. I mean, we could lose the next two games. We could easily win the next two games. Our team is definitely good enough for that. We have enough talent. But at the same time, we could start off the WIAC season 0-3, which would be scary.
Yeah, definitely scary, especially a team that, you know, we're obviously coming into preseason polls. It seems like you got Whitewater, La Crosse, River Falls. Those are your usual suspects. And then us in Platteville are kind of left over for fourth and fifth. But with Platteville undefeated right now and then knocking off La Crosse week one like that, now they got to go, they're back home and they play River Falls, which I think is an even more intriguing matchup now when you've seen what River Falls can do on the offensive side of the ball still. And then Platteville knocking off La Crosse, still undefeated, 4-0 on the season. The WIAC will be very interesting. We've been going on quite a long time. It is 5:35. But, yeah, a lot of good stuff coming from the Titan Athletics and the WIAC Conference. We want to make sure we got all of it. But Titan football, again, will be home this weekend against La Crosse. Good old football pub crawl weekend coming up. And then next weekend after that is Oshkosh Homecoming, where they will host Platteville for some very – they are in Oshkosh in the meat of their schedule right now with two tough games coming up. So that will conclude our Titan Athletics segment. When we come back – next on the sports page, the Badgers steamrolled the Boilermakers. Not much of a game there, fellas, but we will talk about it. And the Packers get a win on the road in L.A. It is all coming up here on the sports page, 90.3 WRST-FM.
Hey, you. Have you downloaded the Radio FX app? Listen to 90.3 WRST anytime and anywhere. And interact with our student-ran station. Participate in surveys, chats, and polls, all with our student DJs, only on the Radio FX app. That's the Radio FX app for 90.3 WRST FM Oshkosh.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We've been banging on the drum all day long. Packers get a win on the road in L.A. We will get to it real quick, but first, we'll discuss the Badgers absolutely steamrolling the Purdue Boilermakers at home. Fellas, we talked about it. This was definitely the game that the Badgers needed to get back into the winning category, and they did just that and more. 52-6, they never looked back. They scored 14. They scored 21 in the first half, and then another 21 in quarter number three. And then just roll on to win 52-6 against Purdue. Thoughts on it? I mean, again, not much of a game really to talk about, but we got to mention when the Badgers do good here on the sports page, and it's good to see them get back in the win column.
Yeah, you know, the Badgers won their 18th straight game against Purdue, which is nearly as long as I've been alive. So I don't even remember the last time that Purdue beat Wisconsin. But if I'm being honest, most of this game almost looked like Purdue lost more than the Badgers won. I mean, there was muffed punts. Purdue had a bunch of penalties, some fumbles, interceptions. Purdue really kicked themselves in the butt with these mistakes. I didn't really feel like the Badgers really had a commanding lead on this team. Like, the scoreboard definitely says they had a commanding lead. But you look at this, and Braden Locke had two interceptions. He still threw for three touchdowns, but he didn't look, like, amazing to me. There was a couple of plays where, sure, there was a big gain, but Purdue couldn't wrap up. They made very few tackles. I don't really have the tackle numbers on me, but I would assume that they made probably half the amount of tackles that the Badger defense did, because they, frankly, looked terrible. Purdue looked like a team that shouldn't even be in the Big Ten. They had no offense, no defense, and they averaged seven less minutes. As a team, they averaged seven less minutes of time of possession than any other team in the Big Ten. So honestly, I say we just kicked Purdue out of the Big Ten at this point, because they shouldn't even be here.
I just want to say that the Badgers advanced the ball offensively 589 yards, which I thought was insane. And not only that, but they also had their longest yard touchdown with 69 yards being their longest that they've had this season. Yeah, like Jacob said, a lot of mistakes that Purdue was making. It almost seemed like they were just pretty much just giving up after the first half, it seemed like. And, I mean, I thought there was a lot of similarities to the Titan game with Whitewater. Just simple mistakes were just costing Purdue the biggest amount of points.
Yeah, and the simple mistakes from Purdue, Purdukey as they're known on the UW-Madison campus after that game, allowed the Badgers just to go off on, it seems like, all levels of skill position. I mean, Twee Walker had 19 carries for 94 yards, 3 touchdowns. He had a game of the year. And there was a lot of depth along this Badgers roster that got involved in this game and was able to contribute. Dylan Jones, he had 7 carries for 65 yards. Cade Yacomelli found the end zone off of 5 carries and 39 yards. Trek, how do you say that last name?
Which one?
Trek, is it Kekahuna? I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, it is Kekahuna.
Kekahuna.
Yeah.
6 receptions off 134 yards and 2 touchdowns, so a huge game for him. And then Vinny Anthony with 2 receptions for 66 yards, 1 touchdown. Not many receptions, but still contributing very well. So, yeah, this was a game that the Badgers were just able to shine off of and get a lot of guys in the rotation. Very good game for them going on to some tougher games coming up in the Big Ten, but we've been hoping for the Badgers to get back on the right track, and they do against Purdue. They're going to go on 2 road games here coming up the next 2 weeks. They are at Rutgers, which should be another one of those games where the Badgers can control the tempo and, you know, come out on top. And then also Northwestern, which that one I'm not holding my breath for, but Northwestern has given us more trouble than, you know, we'd like to see, especially in years where, I mean, even when we still had Jonathan Taylor on this team. There were years where we should have beat Northwestern and came up short, or, you know, it wasn't, you know, was not what we planned out to be. So,
especially on the road, too.
Yeah.
That's being a road game with their new temporary stadium there next to the Lake Michigan. With that wind coming off, usually Northwestern is known for their, like, windy.
Yeah.
It's known as being super windy and mostly just a run game. That's going to be even more troublesome for the Badgers if they have to throw the ball. And look it up next against Rutgers. You know, at first I was kind of like, you know, Rutgers, not necessarily really known as a football school for a long time now. I was thinking, you know, the Badgers probably going to have an easy game. Until I actually looked into the, they're the Knights. Scarlet Knights.
Correct. Yes. Yep.
They are actually 4-1 on the season. They only lost to Nebraska 14-7. And Nebraska's a top 25 team. They also beat Washington, a team who made the college football playoff last year, 21-18 on the road. Oh, Rutgers averages 29.4 points a game and limits their opponents to only 15 points a game. So that's going to be actually a much closer game than I think people think.
Yeah, you've definitely raised some things for me to think about, Jacob, going into that game. But, yeah, Rutgers and Northwestern historically is a team or teams that the Badgers usually don't have trouble with. But with, I guess, what you're proposing now with Rutgers having this good start to the season and Northwestern giving us trouble in previous years, you know, those games could go either way. That Rutgers game will be 11 a.m. on Big Ten Network. The times for the next few games for the Badgers still to be determined. But these are must-win games, I think, for the Badgers if they want, you know, any shot at a bowl game or, you know, working their way up in the Big Ten rankings, because you have a tough schedule coming up after that. You got to host Penn State, who's number 4 in the nation right now. You got to go to Iowa, and Iowa always gives us a tough time no matter what. Yeah, they don't have an offense, but their defense is so good that it doesn't matter. You got to host Oregon, which is number 3 in the nation. Then you're at Nebraska, and we know that Nebraska's off to a unusually good start this year. And then the battle for Paul Bunyan's axe will be at Camp Randall this year, and that's always a tough game. No matter how the season goes for both Minnesota and Wisconsin, that game is always up for grabs no matter what. So I think that these next 2 games are definitely must-wins because the rest of the schedule for the Badgers doesn't really look like it's in their favor.
Yeah, and I think in the Big Ten, we've seen that anybody can beat anybody. We saw Minnesota take down USC, a ranked team. That was a shock to me that the Golden Gophers could take down the Trojans like that. So I think there's opportunities for the Badgers. I think they're going to win a couple of games down the stretch here, but like you said, it could go either way. We don't really know what Badger team we're going to come out and see. Is it going to be the team that blew a lead against USC, a team that they probably should have beat, or this team that came out and absolutely destroyed Purdue? I don't have the answer to that, and I guess we're going to find out what this team really looks like the next couple weeks.
Yeah, we will find out. There was a lot of other good storylines around college football. Vanderbilt beat Alabama, and I don't know, I'm sure you guys saw this. They carried the goalpost. I don't know how many miles that is.
It was 3.4. They took it out of the stadium, down Broadway in Nashville, and all the way to the river.
All the way to the Cumberland River and dumped it in there. And the next day, I think today, it was reported that the fire department got it out of the river. So the goalpost, the goalpost has been rescued there in Nashville. But, yeah, crazy game. I ended up getting some eyes on that and didn't really think Vanderbilt was going to be able to hold them off. And I think a lot of people thought that, all right, it's Alabama. Like, what's going to happen here? It's going to go their way. But Vanderbilt holds them off. Vanderbilt unranked against Alabama, who is currently number one right now, the best team in the nation. So very good story there.
That was like Vanderbilt's national championship game, though.
Pretty much.
Because Vanderbilt has stunk at football the last 10-plus years.
Yeah.
They are not known for their football teams. They're more of a baseball school than a football school.
Yeah.
But that was an insane game to watch because you're sitting there going, you know Alabama's going to come back. They're not just going to sit there and lose. You know they're going to come back. And then they started to come back, and you're like, there's no way Vanderbilt can hold on to this lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see a couple of mistakes, and suddenly you're like, oh, my gosh, I just can't believe what I'm watching. Vanderbilt somehow just took down Alabama, and then later on, Tennessee ended up losing too.
Right. Arkansas State or just Arkansas?
Just Arkansas.
Arkansas beat them. And did the same thing with the goalposts.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you look on Instagram and Vanderbilt's carrying the goalposts down Broadway. So very good stuff there. A lot of good storylines around the college football scene. We will move on to the NFL, where the Packers get a 24-19 win over the Rams and another game for the Packers. Like we said with the Badgers, that the Packers were poised to win this. A beat-up Rams team, even though they were at home, have a very good coach in Sean McVay and a very experienced quarterback in Matthew Stafford. Jordan Love, he throws a pair of touchdown passes to rally past the Rams 24-19. So some good stuff there. I personally expected that the Packers would win this game, especially coming off that loss against Minnesota, which, you know, still statistically should have been a win, even though that was probably one of our worst games we've put together. But a get-right game for the Packers. Good to see them back in the win column. And kind of expected against a beat-up Rams team that has struggled the past few weeks. They're coming off losses now to us. They lost to the Chicago Bears last week, which the Bears, my goodness. I know that the Panthers aren't that good, but, I mean, they made them look like a JV team at Soldier Field. So I believe everybody won for the NFC North coming into this week. The Packers got a win. The Bears got a big win. The Vikings are still 5-0. I don't understand that at all. I thought Rodgers and the Jets were going to be the ones to take them down in London, but I guess not. And then you had Detroit on the bye. So the NFC North is just, I think, not going to fail to deliver at all this year.
I think the Packers are actually kind of lucky to win. Excuse me. They're lucky to win that game. They did not look very promising offensively after really their first drive, and they really only scored after that from the fumble and interception from the Rams. So Love didn't look that good either. He made a couple of bad decisions, especially that one in the end zone, where I get it, you don't want to have the safety in the end zone. You can't run out the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
And you can't really throw it intentionally, ground it, because that's still going to be counted as a safety. But you still got to at least throw it somewhere else besides that. At least try to throw it out of bounds, not try to throw it at your guy. That was just a dumb decision that ended up costing us 7 points. Well, 6 points, because I believe he missed the extra point. But it was just a dumb decision, and it's one of those decisions that we've seen Love now throw the last couple games he's been out there. So I don't know if there's still, you know, more work that needs to be done with Love in the coaching staff, because last couple of games, he's throwing 4 interceptions now. So I don't know if we should be concerned, but I do want to give a shout out to Xavier McKinney, who once again had another interception.
5 now.
So we talked about this last week. Are you thinking about buying a McKinney jersey? Because last week you said that you were considering it if you got another interception.
I probably will have to now. I'm just so glad that we got him in free agency. One of the best free agency pickups that we've had. 5 interceptions, and he almost had 2. Almost had 2 in this game that got right out of his hands. But, yes, continues that streak of 5 interceptions. And The defense still looking good. I think Jeff Hafley has this defense completely turned around, and
yeah.
This year has been proof that Joe Barry should have been kicked to the curb a long time ago. But yeah, the defense continuing to succeed. And I do think that, you know, as Jordan Love, as the season progresses, you know, we're going to see him, you know, come out of his shell. I think we're going to start to see him, you know, play the way he did closing that season. I think the injury did set him back a little bit, and I think that there's still, it's not rust, but I think there still might be some jitters on, I don't want to re-aggravate this because I do want to be here. I want to prove to people that I am worth the money I'm getting paid. And I think the Packers want to prove that too, that we have the guy, we have our guy, and he's the right one moving forward. And we are going to, you know, keep him out there and prove to the rest of the league that, you know, this is our guy going forward and that he's worth the money we're paying him.
I was really happy to see, I think it's Narvison, their kicker, finally redeeming himself and getting that field goal for the Packers. But like you guys were talking about with that interception with Love, I feel like he was really trying to avoid getting sacked. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there was just like a big thing for him, like afraid of getting hurt again because he doesn't want, you know, right. McKinney.
Yeah.
To take his spot. But I mean, some of the touchdowns that Jordan Love threw.
You're thinking of Malik Willis.
Malik Willis, my bad. Some of the touchdowns that Love passed to, there's some pretty good ones. There was a 70-yard touchdown to Kraft. Reed had a really nice one to a 95-yard all the way to the 1 yard to the goal line. I feel like there's still like some jitters that needs to be shaken off. But I mean, I think Jordan Love's not doing too bad.
No, especially for coming off that injury and coming back a lot sooner than we thought he would. And still delivering, still winning ball games. At the end of the day, a win's a win. You know, they're going to have some stuff to clean up because I think they do have two tough home games coming up, and I think that they get the Cardinals coming up to Lambeau and the Houston Texans. Houston just beat Buffalo in a three-point game, and Arizona just went into San Francisco and shocked the 49ers. Now, granted, the 49ers don't have all their X factors back right now. I don't think the 49ers are the team that we saw last year, but the Cardinals are an underrated team, and they to go into San Francisco and win that football game the way they did is a very impressive feat. And I think the Cardinals and Texans have a lot of momentum coming into this season, and I knew that they were going to be tough matchups even when the schedule was first posted. Houston, for sure, because we've talked about this. Houston is kind of like the AFC Packers. C.J. Stroud had one of the best rookie quarterback seasons. I don't want to say of all time, but it might be up there for sure. That I've seen, but he put together such a great season, and the Texans ended up making the wild card, making the playoffs at a time where they were a poverty franchise. I mean, they were the laughingstock of the AFC, and that team was just completely turned around. So they were definitely one to watch on that schedule, and now with the Cardinals having the success that they've had, it'll be tough sledding with these two games. They are definitely must wins, but they're not guarantees at all for the Packers.
Yeah, the Packers had issues once again moving the ball. Last game we saw it against Minnesota in the first half, they couldn't move the ball. This time after halftime, they couldn't move the ball, which was an issue against Tennessee and Philadelphia. We've seen this now multiple times where there's always a quarter or two where they can't seem to move the ball. And again, kind of like the Titans, I don't know if this is coaching, if they only script, you know, they only script a certain number of plays. Is it when they go off script that they have issues? I don't know, but third down efficiency, Packers only converted on 1 of 8 third downs for 12.5%. The Rams were 8 of 16, that's 50%. So we have really been struggling on third down conversions, which is going to be how you win games. If you make those critical third down conversions, you're going to have a lot more success than a team that is only 1 of 8 on third down efficiency, especially when you play better teams like San Francisco coming up later in the year, even Minnesota again. Those are games where you can't only make 1 of 8 of your third downs.
Yeah, and you got to get the run game going too, because Josh Jacobs scored his first touchdown on the season, and we're what, week 6? Like, that definitely needs to turn around. It was great that he was able to finally get in. It's better now than, you know, week 7, week 8, week 9, and he's still without a touchdown. But the Packers had, for 45 minutes, they had the best running back duo in the NFL. That was before they got rid of Aaron Jones, obviously. But I was very hyped to see Josh Jacobs added to this roster. Have I been a little disappointed with the production that I've seen from him? Yes. But I'm glad he was able to find the end zone and put together a good game against the Rams. But I still think that's something that the Packers need to establish is that run game. I don't think that as good of a player as Josh Jacobs is, we're not as established running the ball as we were with Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones did everything for that offense, especially when Jordan Love was, you know, on the seesaw question mark, you know, kind of thing. And I think that our skill positions are a lot more developed. Jaden Reed is awesome. Dontavian Wicks, awesome. Tucker Kraft, Luke Musgrave. Like, at that point, I don't even know who you start at tight end because Kraft and Musgrave are both very productive and contribute a lot when they're on the offense. So I would like to see this offense be more balanced in running the ball and why we do need to rely on Jordan Love quite a bit because, you know, again, we want to prove to everybody that he's the guy. And I don't think we have to prove that to many people. It's just a matter of Jordan Love being more consistent throwing the ball. But on top of that, I want to see the run game established a lot more. I want to see Jacobs in the end zone more. Emmanuel Wilson has been stepping up, I think, pretty good for the A.J. Dillon, who is out for the year coming into this season. Unfortunately, won't see the field this year. But, yeah, I just really want to see that run game established more on that offensive side.
Yeah, I think the reason why our run game was so dominant last year is because you had both Jones and A.J. Dillon. Both of those guys could easily pop off at least a 60-yard game. We could have probably half of our offense be just from the run from those two guys. Now you only have Jacobs. They really only have to worry about one running back. And it's a lot easier just to plan defensively for one running back instead of having to worry about two guys, Dillon being that bruising back and Jones being the more elusive back. Now we really only have the elusive back.
Yeah, we really only have. I mean, Josh Jacobs and Emmanuel Wilson, I've noticed, are very similar builds. We don't really have that, you know, again, as good as Josh Jacobs is, I feel like he is more of a bulldozer kind of guy and kind of more of an A.J. Dillon type running back, and Emmanuel Wilson, the same thing. We don't really have that elusive guy like an Aaron Jones or anybody like that on the team anymore, and I think that that's still something that's being figured out is, like, what is our offense? Right now, we're definitely more air raid. Like, that's what we rely on the most, and that's great when it works because it has worked throughout this season, but establishing the run, especially against with these games coming up, and we're going to get into the colder months of ball. Once we get into November and December ball, that's when you stock up in fantasy football and running backs because they're going to go off. So, yeah, definitely want to see this team establish the run more.
I got a question for you, Dillon.
What's that?
Do you think McKinney gets his sixth interception in the next game?
At this point, I don't think it's far-fetched. I really don't. He's going against two good quarterbacks coming up. I think Kyler Murray and C.J. Stroud are really good quarterbacks, but that really just hasn't mattered who he's gone against so far. He's just able to be everywhere on the field, sideline to sideline, and make those big plays. And I'm gonna say it right now, I think he gets six, and I think that the streak continues. How long? I don't know. At this point, you know, he could have a pick every single game.
The last time a player had six straight interceptions was Trayvon Diggs in 21. But before that, last time there was six straight was Dick Night Train Lane, 1956.
Do you, any of you know who that is?
Yes, I do, actually.
You do know.
Yes,
you do.
Because in Madden, you can actually, used to be able to play as him in Madden Ultimate Team. So I used to, you know, especially on Madden Mobile.
Right.
But anyways, I have seen highlights of him back in the 50s, a legendary corner, when they really didn't even track interceptions. I believe he had 16 interceptions that season when he picked off six straight.
Wow. Well, but glad I found out. What's his name again? I'm glad I
Dick
found out.
Dick Night Train Lane.
Dick Night Train Lane. Today's the day I found out about Dick Night Train Lane. We have about 2 minutes left, so we will spend the last 2 minutes going over this Monday night matchup between the Kansas City Chiefs and the New Orleans Saints. Looking at scores around the league, you had Minnesota beating the Jets again 23-17. Chicago ended up getting a big win. Baltimore beat Cincinnati in overtime 41-38. Miami beat New England 15-10. Washington, a commanding win over the Browns. Jacksonville gets their first win, 37-34 over the Indianapolis Colts. Houston takes down Buffalo, 23-10. Denver gets a commanding win over Vegas. And then San Francisco losing to Arizona. Packers end up getting a win over the Rams. Giants beat Seattle in the 12-man zone. And then Dallas beats Pittsburgh on Sunday night, setting us up for the finale here tonight on ESPN. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman on the call. The Kansas City Chiefs at the New Orleans Saints. The Saints have been off to a start that I don't think many people thought they would be at, especially with Derek Carr under center.
Yeah, but I will say I'm going to have to go with the Chiefs on this one just because of the referees. We've seen it now plenty of times where it looks like a team is going to walk away with a win over the reigning Super Bowl champions, but then something happens with the referees, and then it's a big blow-up on Twitter, on Instagram, and you see the plays, and you're like, wow, like, are the Chiefs paying off these referees or what? So I'm going to take the Chiefs in this one.
Yeah, Taylor Swift's all over social media celebrating. Aiden, who you got in this one?
Personally, I want the Chiefs to win this one.
You want the Chiefs to win?
I kind of want